Greetings and welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. Today is Thursday, December 1st, 2016, and I am Dave Hamilton standing in for Mr. Jeff Gamet, who is traveling this week. Joining me today, I have Mr. Adam Christensen. Adam, thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me back again.
Of course, man. And back as always, Mr. John Martellaro. John,
I've never learned how to talk like that, but that's an interesting way to go. So, so for all you listeners out there, good morning. It's John Martellaro. Hey, I can do that
too. Yeah, we're gonna now. You can we can have you do the intro for Mac Geek Gab now, John.
That's right, so I'm good. Surprised the heck out of my listeners.
Yeah, that surprised the heck out of me. So, yeah. All right. So we'll start with you, John, because you seem revved up and ready to go. Yesterday, you published a piece, How Tribal Warfare Caused Apple's Loss of Gloss. And really, the only reason I wanted to include it in the show was so I could say that title because it rolls off the tongue so well. But now that we're here, we might as well talk about your piece, too, because it was pretty good.
One reader said, I thought you were going to be referring to Apple's displays not being glossy anymore. And I was all eager to hear what you had to say.
Of course.
Wow. That's so oddly specific.
Apple doesn't sell a display anymore. So whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, Apple always has been under fire for various reasons. And there are people who have a lot of hubris about different operating systems and Windows, and we've had the PC wars, and there's always this friction and provincialism. But ever since the Apple's Hello Again event on October 27th, there's been more than a usual amount, especially amongst the Apple community, of fussing and irritation and annoyance and combative negative feelings about Apple and its attention to the customers and its direction. And so I was spending some time over the Thanksgiving break pondering why there was this newfound irritation with Apple amongst people who were normally very much inclined to celebrate what Apple does. So it was kind of amped up a bit, and I started thinking about why this might be. And I like to look at the grand picture, sort of lay out the scope of the community once in a while. And I realized that this tribal warfare thing, the people who join camps, who join people of the same mind on Reddit or on Twitter or Facebook, social media tends to create tribes. And so instead of having an individual relationship with Apple, where you simply size up the product and go buy it with glee, your perspective goes through the lens sometimes of the community that you're in. And that tribe can have an agenda, and it nourishes itself, and it weeds out dissenters, and it sort of self-promotes itself. And that can lead to a sort of self-righteous approach that maybe is not well considered and not well thought out. So what you've got is you've got these various tribes who are fighting with each other and fighting with Apple. And there are, you can name a few. There's the operating system tribes. There's the audiophile tribes. There's the technical creative professional tribes. And they all have their needs and their wants. And they have avenues in the internet, plenty of outlets to express their needs and their interests. But Apple tends to discount those tribes because of several reasons, and I listed five very briefly. They're committed to following the footsteps of Steve Jobs, and they feel like they're on a righteous path. The product roadmap is held in secret, so every time somebody in the tribe member says something that evidences a lack of knowledge of what Apple's going to do, they can be easily discounted as being ill-informed. So secrecy helps Apple's hubris in that sense. Apple has a great feedback mechanism, which I wrote about and linked to, that tells them how people are using their operating systems. And that's why they drop features from time to time, is because their Excel spreadsheet or whatever they use, numbers, says, well, 1% of the people are using this feature, so we're not going to roll it into the next version of iOS or macOS, or support it, continue to support it. And that probably led to the automation thing that we talked about. Hmm. And Apple retail stores are a good way for Apple to connect directly with customers and get a lot of feedback. And finally, the sales figures, which they don't always divulge completely, like the Apple Watch or the breakdown of MacBooks versus desktops. You know, they don't release numbers on how many Mac Pros they sold and Mac Minis and so on. So Apple can keep this stuff to itself, use it to inform its product design, and doesn't have to listen to the tribes. But there are some important tribes. And
I just want to interject one thing. Sure. As you said it twice now, they don't listen to the tribes or they discount those tribes. That's certainly an interpretation. I think a more accurate way of saying it is they don't engage those tribes. Whether they listen or discount them is frankly something we don't know.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, occasionally the tribe will bring up something very important and Apple will say, yeah, we screwed up, and they'll respond to it.
Right. Like the calendar spam thing, right? I mean, tribe got busy ranting about this and Apple didn't obviously engage the tribe. It was, okay, here's our statement on this, which was weird, oddly fed to Renee. He was on campus yesterday. I started getting texts from people. They're like, do you know Renee's on campus today?
Tribal leader.
Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. I'm like, no, I didn't know he was on campus.
So in summary, though, I wrote about how when you analyze Apple, you have to have a sense about the direction and the credence and the motivations of the tribes versus Apple's tendency to sometimes be a little bit off-putting and secretive and not well communicating with key tribes, and the creative professional fuss after Hello Again was part of that.
Yeah.
So I tried to put it in a global perspective about what's going on and how to think about the emerging voices and the friction and the tribes that want Apple to do one thing, and then Apple seems to go off in another direction, and then we all get upset, and then the tribe beats its drums in the echo chamber, and we get even more froth at the mouth.
It's interesting what you say about the echo chamber, because the other thing that I notice, and you know, as far as relating to Apple's response or how or lack of response or whatever they might do, is that echo chamber amplifies the sound of the drums of those tribes to the point where it can be, from an outside source, perceived as being larger or louder than the actual underlying issue is, right? So social media gives small tribes a much larger voice, or what is perceived as a much larger voice in a lot of cases.
I wrapped up the article with an emphasis on the idea that we don't buy our Macs so that we can complain. We buy our Macs, generally most of us, so we can achieve something in a positive way.
Yeah,
we're trying to communicate. We're trying to build. We're trying to design. We're trying to educate. We're trying to, you know, build an aircraft wing or design a building or something. So we buy our machines to do something productive and positive. And at the end of the article, I recall the words of Steve Jobs when he introduced iPhoto and talked about family memories. And there's a passion there for Apple and Steve Jobs' legacy to create and to build and to serve. And so the overlying principle, and that's why he said, this is what we do in that WWD, Mac world. This is why we do what we do. So you got to keep that in mind whenever you think about the fuss and the agitation. Go off and do something positive and use your Macs to, you know, do what you were doing to change the world and do something great.
So here's the thing, right? Because this is not new. If we rewind back to when, you know, Apple was beleaguered, right? People were still buying Macs to do all the great things that they do with them. Okay. And the rest of the world was using Windows or whatever it was, mostly Windows, and complaining about how, oh, the Mac is just a silly thing. And like, there were all these people that had this opinion that Macs were somehow not good enough, either toys. They were toys or but if we sort of abstract it out, it's they had this complaint about the Mac, accurate or not. They had this complaint that the rest of their echo chamber supported enough that they just continued buying Windows machines, right? So Apple had to build a corporate culture where they didn't engage that. They would only do what they wanted to do. And now things have changed a little bit, and for a lot of reasons. Number one, Apple isn't beleaguered, right? They with the iPod and iPhone and the iMac, everything that we could talk about here, they have a position of dominance in the market. The echo chamber also is far more public now with social media and everything. Everybody can join it. You don't. It doesn't just have to be the people in your office that you're ranting about this stuff with. You can rant with anybody around the world. And so the tribes have grown because of both of those things, frankly. So but Apple really hasn't changed their MO, at least not in terms of do they react and just deliver the largest tribe what it wants? Because if that were the case, we would have had, you know, Apple. Well, we had clones and it was a bad thing, right? For Apple, I actually kind of liked it personally, but. You know, it turned out not to be such a good thing for shareholders. And but, you know, this is what Apple does. And now we're just on the other side of that coin. So,
yeah, but we have to be careful, Dave, because the tribes, even though they're not always rational and in sync with what Apple's vision is, tribes can be dangerous, too. They can sway. They can become emotional and demagoguery, and they can take over the conversation.
Absolutely.
And Apple can find itself distancing itself from to the point where it fails to understand a certain amount of psychological momentum against the company, and that right. can be dangerous.
Well, yeah, and this is why Apple, I think, was smart in changing one fundamental thing about the company, and that is their PR department. It still has echoes of the Apple of old. Don't get me wrong, but they are way more open than they were. They're not as open as they should be, in my opinion, or as open as other companies are. But they're way more open than they were 10 years ago. And yeah. and I think that that's a byproduct of frankly of Steve Jobs no longer being there, and also of Katie Cotton no longer being there, and it's kind of the old regime of that is no longer there. But that mentality could have easily persisted. There's enough people there that were part of the old regime that have also changed, even though they're still there. And I think it's more than just these people left. I think it's, well, we can't just ignore the people that talk negatively about us. Maybe we don't engage them. You know, we take that with us forward, but we got to really pay attention to that now. Whereas in the past, we could, like you said, just this is why we do what we do. We like it. And we know that there'll be some subsection of the computer using population that likes it too. I don't know. That's yep. what I got. Yep.
Yep.
All right, Adam. Now I want to turn to you because you had an interesting perspective. You brought an interesting perspective about Apple's cloud services, and I want to expand on that a little bit. And then I think you're going to talk about it even more in depth on your MacCast show later today.
Yeah, something came up, and it's actually kind of an offshoot of a conversation, or actually more, I guess I was trying to do analysis of a conversation that's been growing, I think, in our community for a long time around Apple and its cloud services, specifically the fact that if you look at things like iCloud Photo Library, if you look at things like the new feature, the new desktop syncing feature in macOS Sierra, that Apple is giving us more tools and more things to use more cloud storage, to use more of their iCloud services. And there's been a growing frustration that Apple continues to have their free tier for iCloud be, you know, a measly 5 gigabytes. And you see other services like Amazon offering unlimited photo storage, or Google offering unlimited photo storage, things like this. I think, you know, Flickr gives you 1 terabyte. And so in the community, there's a lot of people rumbling, saying, why don't we get more? Why aren't we getting more free storage and things like that? And that got me just thinking about that idea, because I kind of have been in that camp, kind of getting back to this idea of tribes, right? The tribe has been shouting, we need more cloud storage, and Apple's too expensive, and look at, you know, what I get on all these other services. And they're trying to compare them. And I started thinking about that topic and went, you know, well, what is going on here? So when this person emailed me and I responded, I thought, you know, and I remembered that, you know, the last couple of quarterly results calls, the biggest area of growth for Apple in terms of revenue, not in terms of the percentage of the business, but in terms of revenue growth, the largest segment of their business that's growing is their services business. And that includes things like Apple Music and iCloud storage. So people are buying more storage from Apple, and it's having an impact on its bottom line. And you start to compare that to businesses like Amazon or Google. For them, their cloud services are more, and this is how I'm seeing it, to me, that they're loss leaders for them. You know, Amazon wants to sell more Prime memberships and get you to buy more things on Amazon. And so if they add free cloud storage in, you know, photo storage into their mix, they're hoping that they're going to get more people buying Prime subscriptions. They don't really care about making money off of that services segment. And so I think that's what's going on. I'm, you know, again, like you alluded to, I'm going to look into this a little bit differently, and I'm sort of just, this is a grain of an idea, and I'm curious to get your guys' take on it. But, you know, it's a different culture. So I don't know that you can compare the two. And I don't know, the other thing is, because a lot of people are saying this should be cheaper, I don't know that Apple is going to change their costs anytime soon to the consumer, because this is now part of their business mix. You know, it's part of their revenue model.
They're at a dangerous spot, though, with this 5 gig free tier. I get that they likely don't want to and may never offer an unlimited or effectively unlimited, you know, 1 terabyte free or something like that. Right. I don't think they'll do that. But the problem with the 5 gig free is, for many people, it's not enough to even do one device.
Right.
And that's where, like, you can't even back up one device with 5 gigs. Whereas several years ago, you could. And so, it, you know, that's the problem, is that hasn't evolved. If they had slowly let that inch up, right? Like, you know, maybe 3 years ago, now it's, you know, 10 gigs. And if we were at like 25 free, that still wouldn't be enough for most people to do their iCloud photo library. But it would be
maybe one device. I mean,
depending on how you do it. That's right. But it would be far less of a problem. I mean, I have a lot of novice users. I don't want to call them novices, non-experts, that just have, you know, they give up. They don't back up to iCloud because they don't understand how to tweak all their settings. And they frankly don't want to mess around with it just to get it to back up the stuff that actually would be really important to them in that free 5 gig box. And, you know,
you're saying they opt out.
They opt out. Yeah, well, it's not even opt out. It yells that it can't complete a backup, and they just dismiss the dialogue, and that's the end of it. You know, and
yeah, I see some of that. I'm also seeing the opposite, though, where that little link is there. It's like, get more storage. Mm-hmm. And they click on it and it goes, oh, it's 99 cents a month and you can back up what you want because you're going to get 200 gigs. And they click the button.
Yep.
And that's what I'm arguing is Apple's going to have a hard time. You know, I think it's working for them. And I think, again, getting back to,
yeah, maybe it's,
you know,
working.
sort of the voice of the tribe screaming, you know, this is outrageous. And this is, you know, but this is the small guys like us, you know, the tech people who understand that you can get, you know, unlimited photo storage over if you switch over to Google services, and it's not that hard to integrate, and you know, you can get the app and stuff like that. And a lot of those people make that choice, but you have to have somebody in your tribe that's that technical person that can help you with that. Yeah. But I think there's a much larger set of people, like my mom or my brother, or you know, I can influence these people, but oftentimes for them it's just easier to pay the 99 cents.
Oh, right. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. And 99 cents is it for what you pay. It's cheap, right? I mean, for what you get, it's and that is enough for most people at 99 cents. Yeah.
And that's what I'm arguing on Apple's side of things. If you step back from this lens of, well, this is ridiculous, and I know it's ridiculous because, you know, Google has this. The average casual person with an iPhone, though, who's not connected to that tribe, just goes, oh, well, this is how I solve this problem. Or they go to the Genius Bar, and the Genius Bar goes, well, you know, you can get, you know, just pay 99 cents a month and your backups will start again. And they go, oh, okay. And I think because there's more people than that, that's why we're seeing this area of revenue growth for Apple.
Yeah.
And why it's likely not going to change in the short run. I mean, until that dynamic changes, you know, I think they'll add more. I think they'll adjust the services. They did just recently. You know, you used to pay $3.99 for that up until recently,
that's the
$299, whatever it was.
That's the funny part, is the free tier has remained at 5 gigs, but as soon as you're willing to go above that, the other tiers are way less expensive than they used to be. In fact,
smartly so, you know.
Yeah.
So again, that plays back into this argument that I'm making here, right? To a certain degree, because they're going to lower the bar of entry, but they're going to keep the free tier deliberately low because they know there's the taste.
But what they need to do, because I know a lot of people, and I was one of them, that was paying for storage on the old plan. So I think I was only getting 25 gigs or something for my, for 99 cents or whatever. Actually, at 99 cents, doesn't that now get you 50 and 199 gets you 200?
Oh, I may be getting,
I think that's here, right. So. Yeah. But all I had to do was go in and change my plan to the same plan that I had. And actually it got cheaper because I was paying $12 a year, I think, for 25 gigs. And then I went to 99 cents a month for 50. Whatever it was, you need to be aware that this stuff's there and you should go and Dave, pay attention to those. Yes, John.
One of the things I worry about, though, is that when you have a great hardware product, people go into the store, they look at, they touch it, they feel it, and they tell their friends about it, and you have growth. The problem with services growth is you either have to make it painful and force people to do something which is going to annoy them, or you pester them to death until they accept your terms and offer. And so growth in services is a lot more difficult in terms of relationship with the customer because of the pester factor.
Yep. Yeah, that's true. No, they're not pestering you to buy an iPhone, but they are pestering you in a sense that, like you said, there's a pain point. Right.
Yeah.
I'm just arguing that, my argument, again, I need to think about this a little bit more and maybe we'll get some feedback from people, but I think this is deliberately what they're doing, and I think they're aware of it. And I think, and that's why I think it's not going to change, because this deliberate question was, is this going to change? Are we going to get that Apple competing? And my argument right out of, my initial argument after thinking about this is, no, I don't think there's an incentive for them to compete.
Right. Yeah. So, okay. So we do want you to send us your feedback in, because, and I'm going to ask you another question too. Observations@macobserver.com. That's where you can find us, or at TMO Daily on Twitter. Either of those places, we'd love to hear from you. And here's the other question that's sort of the follow-up conversation to this that I was thinking we might have time for today, but we don't, is, there's this mantra. You said, Adam, that there's a mantra of need more free storage, which certainly exists. But there's also this mantra that exists because it at least used to be true. Apple can't do the cloud. That seems like it might have changed. So I'm curious as to your thoughts about that, folks. Observations@macobserver.com, and send those in, and we'll talk about that on a future show. For now, that's all we have. Adam, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah. John, thanks for joining us.
Hey, it was great to be here. John Martellaro was signing off.
And for the rest of you, we'll speak with you again tomorrow.